Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Maprem Tammayo. Tammayo is a musician and composer, author of 6 solo CDs. For many years, Tammayo toured extensively with some of the top names in the spiritual world music scene, including Prince Joshua and Snata Mukaur. Always ready to explore new creative vistas, Tammayo has recently been studying filmmaking and music composition for films. She's now working towards creating meditative and healing content that brings together both musical compositions and magical film footage. Hello, Tammayo. Welcome to the Love Osho podcast. How are you?
Hey, nice to meet you, Francesco. Thank you so much for inviting me here.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. I'm so happy to speak with you today. I think you have a very interesting point of view because you came to Osho in the early 90s, just after Osho left the body, at a time when the commune in Pune was very much vibrant, throbbing with energy. So on the one hand, you just miss Osho in the physical form, but on the other hand, you experience the commune in its full splendor in terms of energies and offerings, which is quite different from today, of course. So I'm really curious to hear your story and from the beginning, of course, and I'd love to know to start how you came to know about Osho.
Okay. So it was I was living in Edinburgh. I just finished my studies. I was hanging out with a musician called Florian, who was a sannyasin, but I didn't know that he was a sannyasin. And his mum and him, they invited me to a party in their house. And at that party, everyone was dressed in white. And I was a bit like, what's going on? And, It was Osho's birthday. I had no idea who Osho was, you know, but anyway, people were there and they had a video and they were supposed to be watching a discourse, but the person had forgotten the discourse. So everyone was sitting there. They were supposed to watch a discourse and no discourse. And of course, I didn't know what was going on. So the people whose house it was had, I Leave You My Dream, which, of course, you know, is the video, this beautiful video of when Osho leaves the body. And they put that on and they played it. And a lot of the people were crying and, you know, it was, but I just sat there. And when I saw Osho lying on this bed covered in rose petals, something happened to me. I mean, I guess now you would say it's a satori or something like that. But basically, I disappeared. I completely disappeared. And yeah, it was beautiful. And when I came back to my body, I knew this is my master and I have to go to Pune. And it was crazy because I didn't even know what a master is. So, and sometimes I look back at that point and I realized that I never did, you know, that was it. It was like, I didn't know anything about Osho. I didn't know any of the stories. I didn't know who sannyasins were. I didn't know about the ranch. I knew nothing, but I knew this is it. And that has stayed with me throughout all the ups and downs on this path. And so, yeah, eternally grateful to those people for inviting me to that party and to whoever forgot the discourse.
Wow, it's extraordinary, beautiful. So that was already, as we mentioned before, the time after Osho left the body. And
yeah, it was 1993, I think, that time. Yeah.
And then you decided, I'm going to go to Pune. Did you go?
I did. I was not very rich. I had to really work hard and make money. And but the following year, I went. And exactly a year after that experience, I took sannyas. Exactly a year. And I remember reading in books that quite often masters did that. You know, the disciple would come and they would be given a year. and then, you know, and so I feel like I had the year. Then I went and I took it on Osha's birthday in 1994.
Wow, lots of very significant coincidence.
Yeah. It's really true. And I think for me also, and this is something I've seen throughout my life, is because I came to Osho through his leaving the body, and yet it was on his birthday. Those two dates have been extremely important to me. And it's almost like this, you know, the crossover between the birth and the death, Osho never born, never died. So these themes have been really, really important in a mysterious way on my path, I think I could say.
Yes. And also the timeline is quite interesting because it's between December and January. So it's perfect timing to let go and reborn.
Exactly. And it's 40 days, actually, which I didn't know. And later on my path, I was quite involved with one of Osho's oldest Indian disciples. And I did three times 40 days meditation between those dates. And in those times, 21 days of silence. So those dates are extremely significant for me, and that period in between as well.
Wow, I actually never thought about the 40 days.
Exactly, me neither. But if you count them, it's 40 days. Pretty crazy.
Pretty spooky, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were in Pune in the early 90s. And
yeah.
I'd love to get a sense, if you could give us a sense of how it was to live there and for how long you've been there and how that changed your life.
Yeah. So as I said, you know, I wasn't very rich. I didn't have a lot of money. I'd just come out of college. So I didn't spend a lot of time in Pune. I went there, I think it was for maybe three months, or I can't remember. It wasn't that long the first time. It was really just over the winter. Maybe it was a bit longer. And I remember living in a little treehouse. And the ashram, where I remember walking into those gates and just crying. It was magical. And I was very, very innocent. I was very, very innocent. And but I remember just feeling so nourished there. And of course, you know, I just arrived. So I think I seem to remember I just did all the programs, you know, in the Buddha hall, because I didn't have money to do all these fancy therapies. So, you know, I did the whirling, and I did the Sufi singing, and I did all the meditations, and then just kind of wandered around the ashram. And I was quite shy, you know, and although I was a musician, I remember going into the musicians department and seeing everyone, and they looked so scary, and I just ran away. So I didn't get involved in the music for a long time. But there was a complete magic there, and you know, the sannyas celebrations were just incredible. There was just this energy there, and this kind of ecstasy, this joy, this silence, this let go. Unbelievable. Though I was always went to the sannyas celebrations, and also the music group after the White Robe. Those songs had such a power, and you know, Miten was playing, and I can't remember who other. Anyway, there were these bands. I think Miten's band was the one that touched me the most at that time, and it was just heaven. You'd been sitting in silence, and then suddenly music started after the discourse, and you could just dance in this gorgeous Buddha hall, which was also so wonderful for me, because there was so much space, and the old Buddha hall with this, you know, it was almost like that you just entered the sky, you know, from there. So these were very, very, very magical things. And, you know, it was like the honeymoon on the path, you can say. And I think that's really very important to have that, because you need the fuel to continue when the real work starts.
Absolutely. And that's exactly why I wanted to get a sense of that, because I think you're absolutely right. You need the fuel, you need that honeymoon, you need that moment where you go and you are overwhelmed with this energy that, you know, lifts you up and and it keeps you going once you go back to the real world, let's say. So, and the way you describe Pune in those days is so beautiful. I went there first time in 1999, so it was already a few years after you were there, but for me it was also life-changing, completely life-changing. Mm-hmm. I've never seen any place like that anymore.
Yeah. I feel very, very grateful that I got that experience, even though I wasn't there very much, but I got that taste, and that was really, really beautiful.
So you mentioned music, of course, and I want to come back to that in just a moment, because I know it's a big part of your life. It's probably the main part of your life. But in terms of you and the sannyas community, you were there for a few months. It was incredible. It filled you with lots of energy and joy. Throughout the years, because I still feel, of course, today that you're so much in love with Osho, and you're so much in love with how did you keep the connection with Osho or with the sannyas community?
Mm-hmm. It's a long story, Francesco. Like so many sannyasins, my life has gone through many different phases. Yeah. Many different countries also. And along the way, I have mixed with the sannyas community and sometimes not. And so it's been a very up and down journey also with music. But I could say, you know, I left Edinburgh eventually and moved to London. And that was a great time. That was around the turn of the century, I guess, around 1999, that time, I was really connected with the London sannyas community. And I stayed in a shared house in Muswell Hill. I was going to Osho Lila, that they built a center there. It was kind of Viresh related, a very juicy, friendly, loving place. And that was just really a lot of fun for me. And I met a lot of sannyasins there. And also in London, there was a great community. So I'm still in touch with friends I made in London. And I see that as that was a really nourishing time of my life. And I was working in London, and that was really cool. I've been through other phases. I mentioned that I was in Pune around the turn of the century, you know, so 1999, 2000. I was also really connected then more with the musicians. And first of all, with Surabhi Prabodh and Adarsha. And we had a band. I even lived with them in Wales and in Pune. We played a lot together around those 2 years, you know, the 1999-2000. And that was a really beautiful experience. And they, you know, they really kind of took me in and invited me to play. And that was really, really great for me. And I sung with Bindu, who unfortunately left his body a few years ago. He was an amazing rock star kind of sannyas musician. And I was his backing singer. And this was just so exciting. I really enjoyed that. And then Manish Vyas and Prem Joshua, you know, who were two of the top musicians, amazing Indian fusion. They invited me to play with them separately. First, I played with Manish in his band and also with Joshua. And that was for me like a window opening on Indian music. And I ended up touring with them for a few years in America and India and Europe. And that was amazing too. So that's another kind of world of sannyas that where I was connected.
Okay, so as we're here, we mentioned that you are a musician, you are classically trained, you are a composer, you are a singer, you have 6 solo CDs under your belt, and for many years, as you just said, you've been touring with some of the top names in the spiritual world music scene, including Prem Joshua. And Prem Joshua is a sannyasin.
Exactly, long time sannyasin, Josh.
He's a great musician. So, yeah, maybe tell us a little bit more. I guess that's the link with you keeping in touch with the Osho spirit.
Absolutely. Well, when I toured with Joshua, we were a lot touring around sannyas communities, like Sedona, for instance, which I love Sedona. I totally love Sedona. But we were also in places like Seattle, in Boulder, where there's a big Sanyas community as well. And also in Texas, around Austin, there was also a Sanyas community, and in LA as well. So I did meet a lot of Sanyasins around the world, actually, when I come to think of it, on those tours.
And you had such a big exposure internationally over a fairly long period of time with Sanyasins and the community. What have you noticed, if there is any difference in how these places, in terms of the energy and the spirit and the people, between the 90s, late 90s to today?
Well, you know, Osho said, be a light unto yourself. Yeah. But that's very difficult, as we know. And I think when Osho was in the body, his light was so burning so brightly. And so a lot, you know, and even people who come after, it's like that light was there, but it wasn't our light. And I guess it's like the further we go, we move away from that point. And I hate to say this, but the light becomes the little flame, becomes less and less and less. And we have to light our own lamps and carry them in the dark, even if it's a tiny flickering lamp, which I always feel with myself. I have this lamp and the light is just flickering and it could blow out at any moment. And I have to be super, super aware to keep that lamp and not let that lamp, that light go out. But I wouldn't say, oh yeah, you know, the light is still burning as strongly. That's not my feeling, I would have to say. Yeah.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, what you're saying is that Osho was this flame burning. Mm. And then as he left, the light is still there, but it's more of an effort of us to
yes,
keep him alive.
Exactly. I think so. Mm. Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, you were asking, compared from then to now, I would say, you know, that the light that maybe you would have felt it's just less. I don't know. I feel that it's less, and it's more, we're kind of on our own with it, and we have to really take care of our own lamps. Osho's there to help us, and if we ask for help, it's there. But I feel it's more, this is my experience. It may not be somebody else's experience, but my experience is it's very much more a solo thing for me now than it was then.
I see. Now that's quite significant, and it's interesting to exchange ideas and hear experiences of other people on the path. And so for you, it's you feel more responsible for yourself, that you are on your own and you have to keep it alive and you have to put more effort
in a way. Yeah. But then, because I'm also, I live in the countryside, and you know, I don't feel a lot of pull also to go to Sanyas centers anymore. It doesn't happen. It doesn't, I don't necessarily feel nourished by that. It was a beautiful phase, and I still love all the friends that I met around the world, and I'm still in touch with them, but I don't personally feel a need to be part of a community anymore. I think that's maybe what I'm trying to say.
Yes, and I have to say, I'm coming to similar sentiments in terms of this need of being around a community that was very strong before, and maybe because that was the model that was established with Osho, and
absolutely,
for a number of years was working very well because it was so nice, and then slowly things started to change to an extent where, you know, things have changed, you know.
Absolutely. But who knows? I always say, you never know. There might come another time. You know, like I would say, you know, you and me are that generation of Sanyasins, aren't we? So the generation that were together with Osho, you know, they are slowly leaving the planet. I mean, in 20 years' time, it will be you and me. We'll also be, you know, pretty old, but we'll have to be the, you know, we're the ones who were that generation. And then there are younger generations coming up who are so full of juice and wonderful. And I really feel very confident that the younger generation will also hold the flame.
Yes, it's hard to envision that for me personally, because before it was easier to get together. Now and I are saying, okay, we are in the countryside and we are kind of happy.
Exactly, exactly.
So the new generations, I don't know how that maybe boom, I don't know.
No, well, I mean, actually, I just want to say this, as far as community and connection is concerned, and this, I mean, it's not something that is permanent, but the path of love, I don't know if you've done that, but that is a really amazing structure, an amazing group where you can really get that connection. You really experience, I would say, a little bit of that Pune energy in a group situation. And the beautiful thing about Path of Love now is, of course, they don't just restrict it to Osho, although Osho is, of course, everything. But, you know, there are people coming from all different walks of life and all different paths and all different masters. But it, when you're in that energy field, it is Osho, or it is divine, or it's, you know, and that is a beautiful, I would say that's still a very alive and beautiful space to get that very, very deep connection with people and with the divine and with yourself. So I'm not involved with the Path of Love now, but I absolutely always give it the thumbs up.
Yes, likewise. We always give a thumbs up every time Path of Love comes up in the podcast. Turia,
exactly.
With the generation, and she's doing an amazing job, part of the team in London and the UK in general. And we had lots of people giving us incredible feedback and impressions. So for you personally, how do you keep your inner flame alive in Germany, in your countryside, on your own?
Well, I live with my husband, so that's very beautiful. This is a really deep question, Francesco, because there are times when I feel my flame is not alive at all. And there are times when it is alive. And maybe I can kind of bring the conversation towards creativity and the path that I've been on. Kind of, especially, I would say, in the last 10 years, since I stopped traveling and I'm just in one place, a lot of creativity has come up in me. It started off with songs, and then it gradually moved. And that whole path of listening, of expressing, of working really hard to get these CDs and everything done, and then the subsequent process of basically the disappointment, going through a disappointment phase of the fact that it hasn't really reached anybody in the world, and kind of giving up. So you can say letting the flame die right back, and then reaching that point of nothing again. And then somehow, I think Osho giving me another little push to start again, and then the next wave comes. And I've done that 6 times now, and even more actually, because I moved into art and now I'm into film. So that whole path, and I would say it's, you know, it's this of being open, of the spark of creativity, of the magic coming through, and then starting to work on that, has really been my path. And I wouldn't necessarily say it keeps the flame alive, but I do feel that this is how Osho is working on me in a multidimensional way. Multidimensional, I mean, you know, like a gardener, he's supporting the things that need supported and cutting away the ego, the things. And I see that me just being somehow unable not to create, I have to create, even despite myself, even despite the fact it doesn't create money. It's, you know, I always have to go through a kind of failure phase. I go through so many frustrations. I've been really pushed to the limit of my psychology in this process. And at the same time, I cannot stop. I have to keep going. And I see, I start to understand it more now, that it's Osho working on me on many, levels. And, you know, he always says, you have no idea what I'm doing. And I think that's really true. I have no idea what he's doing, but I'm kind of helpless. I just have to keep going. And maybe that creative burn in me, the fact that I need to express, it's like stuff comes to me and I just have to let it out, is my lamp. Okay. Maybe that's the lamp.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, creativity has always been a massive part of Osho's message. And that's why he attracted so many artists, musicians, dancers, and people in normally creative. And I also wanted to pick up on the fact that the first thing that you said is that you live with your husband, and sometimes to just being with another person creates this mini, mini Buddha field, which is so important, because again, it's also my experience with Chetna. We feel like wherever we go, even if we just two of us meditate together, even if it's a hotel room somewhere, we create that little bubble of energy of Osho love that
absolutely. And yeah, my partner, my beloved, is Parijat. He's actually a very well-known sannyas musician, and yeah, we have a beautiful little Buddha field here, absolutely, and I'm eternally grateful to him for his love and support here.
Beautiful. So let me try to understand a bit more about your very unconventional creative path, because you experimented in many different disciplines of art, from music to photography to filmmaking to writing. So tell us a little bit more about how that comes about in you, because you were trained as a musician, but then you progress into so many other different disciplines.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I started off as a classical musician, as a classical violinist. And even before I met Osho, the first change happened in that I dropped classical music completely because I felt really pulled to the Irish and Scottish music that was happening in the pubs in Edinburgh. And I was really pulled by that more earthy, let go feeling that was happening there from the very tight, strict classical. And there was something in me that was just really pulled by that. And so I dropped classical completely and started from zero again, sitting in pubs in Edinburgh and just listening. And I remember playing along with these, you know, little old Scottish men on their scratchy old violins in the pubs. And I thought, oh my God, I'm so stiff. I'm not able to let go. And so that was actually the first learning was there, going back to zero and starting again. And I'm really glad that I did that, because that listening in the Irish pub scene really helped me when I started to play Indian. I never really played Indian, but you know, when I started in that scene, that listening had really helped me a lot. So yeah. To come back to it, the path. So I started off there. I moved into Indian classical. I got into singing. So things just present themselves to me. It's like, you know, maybe I suddenly discover, oh, I didn't know I could sing. And then I discovered I could. And then that becomes such a passion. But for many years, until I was about 40, my creativity was not, you can say it wasn't my expression, or I was supporting other musicians. I, you know, so I was playing in the Osho commune, which was wonderful. And that was just us playing for Osho, you know, that was a magical thing. And then I was supporting Joshua, I was supporting Manish, I played with Snatham Kaur also. And so it was only really around the time I turned 40 when I started to feel a desire to make my own CD. And I was living in Singapore at that time. And very amazingly, the people I lived with gave me some recording material, you know, a software and a keyboard and a microphone. And this was just amazing. It just came to me. And then I started to create songs, and I was really like a little bird, you know, just trying to fly. And I remember the question that I had in my head was, what do I have to say? I don't have anything to say. And and then slowly, of course, I did have something to say. But it was, you know, and that first CD of mine is really, I always see it like that little bird. It was like, I didn't really know what I wanted to say. And so quite a few of the songs there are mantra based, and I'm basically not a mantra person. It's not my thing at all. But those first two songs were just because I didn't know what to say. So I used the mantras just to start off. And then I found my voice. So that's that album. You can already see the movement from not knowing what to say to kind of knowing what to say. And then from there, the albums after that became more and more, I would say, Lost and Found was me really pouring out my heart. It was the time I was involved in The Path of Love. And all those songs are very devoted. They're very about being lost, about being found, about, you know, not being able to find myself and then finding myself. So that CD is very much about that. And then it goes on.
Beautiful. So what are you up to lately? What are your latest projects?
What am I doing? So the last thing I did, now we're actually jumping a little bit, is for the last few years I've been involved in film. Again, that's just something that came to me. I bought a camera for fun, and I suddenly, when I had it in my hands, I just felt like I know this. And I started with photography, and then it just moved into film, and film has become a huge passion for me. And we've kind of skipped a bit from the music, because I also got into poetry and talking on music. That was my last album. And the film seems to have come out of that. And I am now, so the last thing I was working on, to answer your question, was a film called Bayaderi. And it was with an Indian dancer friend of mine here in Germany. And we won a competition locally to get funding for a creative work. And we created the film over the winter. I filmed it. She's a dancer, but we told the story of Goethe's Bayaderi. And I worked super hard on that over the winter, finished it in April. And now it is, it's going to a few film festivals. It's won quite a few awards in small film festivals, which is the first time in my life that I ever actually got any recognition for my creativity. So it looks like maybe filmmaking is the way. And so that's not right now, though. Right now, in this minute, I am in a gap. I have no idea what the next step is. I call it a kind of listening and learning space. So there are ideas I have, but I don't really have I'm not moving forward with them. And so again, it's a bit like, this is Osho's way with me, is I have to kind of stay in this desert space, which is not comfortable, of course, and wait. So I'm in a waiting right now. I don't know what's going to come next. Maybe nothing, maybe something. But it's clear I can't do it. This is what has happened in the last few years. It's anything of worth which I've created is clear. It's not really from me. It comes through me. And even in the film, it was the places where I made a mistake where the magic happened. So, you know, I feel a little helpless, but that's a good thing.
Wow. Now, look, sounds like this is exactly the most interesting time, because, of course, it's easier for me to say from the outside, but you described that many times this has happened to you, that you have these creative moments and then you have this gap, and that during this gap is when the pot is cooking and then something is coming out. I really feel very positive about what's going to come next. I'm sure looking at the trajectory that you just recently had, it's a beautiful recognition about for your art and creativity. So I'm sure there is like a shift and something even more beautiful will come out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one can hope, but I really do feel that it's like it's not in my hands. And there was a time in the past where maybe I could say something, and now I have to wait for something to be said. And it's the same with my paintings. I have no control over that. When I paint, it either happens or it doesn't. And if I do something, it's not really anything of beauty. So I think Osho's moving me into that space of being more and more helpless. I just have to let go.
But then, I mean, like this with life, sometimes there are some things that happen that seems like they're bad, but actually they're bringing to something that it needs to happen. Like just recently I had an investigation that I really didn't expect and threw me into some kind of anxiety, but actually it's bringing me to think of something that I didn't think and to make my future that will determine.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm actually thankful that these bad things happened to me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would never call these things bad also. I mean, what has happened to me on the creative path, it has been really difficult because, you know, as an artist, we also like to be successful, or we would like to sell our music, or we would like, you know, that we get something back. My creativity and what I've done has just not really reached, or hasn't vibrated, let's say, with the zeitgeist of the present moment. So that's been really hard for the ego, really hard. And yet I feel blessed that Osho has put me through that and then given me the energy to keep going. And that's perhaps why I've never stayed with one thing, you know, like I made this album and then that, you know, if I'd been successful in one thing, perhaps I would have stuck with it and wouldn't have ended up making films, where I have the feeling perhaps, you know, I don't know where it's all going, but I can see that all the different parts of my creativity come together in film. And so who knows? So yeah, the failure on the outside has been a success on the inside. Maybe we can put it that way.
That's beautiful. Can be a beautiful title for a next project.
Failure and success.
Yes. Yeah. So, Tamayo, we are heading towards the end of this chat, very lively and vibrant and bubbly. And so I have three final questions. Is there anything else you want to add, anything I didn't ask?
No, I think that's okay. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into the last three questions. The first one is, what is, in your view, Osho's greatest contribution to the world?
I'm only allowed to choose one thing.
I know it's hard. You can give two if you like.
Okay, I can have two. So then I would say, of course, dynamic meditation and his books. Yeah.
The second question is, what is the most beautiful gift you personally received from Osho?
Moments of silence. It's not one particular thing, but it's when it happens. When the silence descends, that's the biggest gift.
Wow, that's beautiful. So the last question is, because also throughout the interview, you many times mentioned, you know, Osho is working on me, Osho, as if Osho is a living presence for you, even though we all know Osho is not here with us physically. So who is Osho for you?
Well, he's not a person for me. I think I can only say what he's not. I cannot say who he is. He's not a person. I never had a relationship with him as a person. It's a vastness. It's a solid silence. It's the ground. It's solid ground. Osho is solid ground. That's what I'll say. He's the solid ground.
Wow, very poetic indeed. And in fact, solid silence or solid ground again could be a title for some kind of...
Well, solid ground could be an album, couldn't it?
Absolutely.
Or a film, maybe one day.
So, Tamayo, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the vibrancy and the energy of this connection.
For thank me,
it's you. Been, very, very beautiful. And it was very interesting also to exchange ideas on our sannyas life. We have few years apart in terms of being a generation. It's kind of almost the first generations who came after Osho left the body, but still had that connection of the real Buddha field, how it used to be, even though, of course, you know, people who came in the 70s are different from the 80s, the 90s, exactly. Et cetera. But coming in the 90s is completely different from people who came later and later and later and later. So Thank you so much for taking the time for this interview and for being part of the
Thank you very much, Francesco. Well, it was a pleasure.
Okay, lots of love and a big hug. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit lavoshow.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.